everyone, to our Groundskeeper Chat series. I'm your host, Meg Krueger. I am the content lead with Pioneer Athletics. And today I am joined by my co-host, Weston Appelfeller, and our guest, Tyler Morris, which I'll give Weston the opportunity to introduce him. But I do just have to say I'm a big fan of Tyler. He came on my radar about 3 years ago, I think. There was talk about somebody, you know, getting a job at Vanderbilt, and it was, you know, not released yet who that man may be. So I did a deep dive, stalked him, found him, and here we are today. I've forced him back onto the series to join us for another conversation now that he is at MetLife Stadium, and now I'm stealing Weston's thunder. So I'll turn it over to Weston so he can do the proper introduction of our guest here. So Weston, take it away.
Not creepy at all, Meg. Not creepy at all. Well, thanks. Thanks for passing that over. My name is Weston Appelfeller. I am the market technical advisor here with Pioneer Athletics. Today, we have another great guest. This person has escalated up the turf industry from student worker at Virginia Tech to an assistance role at one of the most prestigious schools in the country, Vanderbilt, to his current position at one of the most used stadiums in the world, MetLife Stadium. This person recently gained his certification as a CSFM and is the head sports field manager there with MetLife Stadium. So I'd like to welcome Mr. Tyler Morris. How are you?
Awesome. Thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it.
So, yeah. Yeah. I'd like to get it started off. First question. And it's not on the script, so it's something you're going to get shocked by. But I think it's probably the most important question that any groundskeeper could answer, or at least one of the most important things that a groundskeeper needs to do. What do you like to do outside of work? How do you get away? Relax? Who do you spend your time with? What do you do?
Yeah, so it's funny because this question always comes up. Everybody's always asking, what do you do in your free time? What do you do in your free time? And it's hard because, like, you work in a stadium that is as busy as MetLife is. You don't have that many free time. So you have to take it when you can get it. So a lot of the times it may be a random Tuesday, it may be a random Thursday, or you may get the whole weekend to be able to go do something. So my girlfriend and I, Alexandria, we spend a lot of time going out and traveling and just trying to see different parts of the country. You know, a couple of weeks ago, we were fortunate to go all the way down to Philadelphia, go visit some colleagues that I see there, and then also do some things just for us. And then we were also able to go up to Boston and visit some of her family that's up there, but also catch, you know, a Patriots game and meet those folks up there as well. So, like, it's two-parted, right? Like, we enjoy seeing more sides of the turf industry as we travel, but it's also fun to just lump that turf into just fun and exciting things that you don't always get to do. Her and I are big into, like, doing escape rooms and, like, just like that kind of fun activity. And we were fortunate in Boston, we were able to go visit, it's called Level 99. So it's very similar, like a Dave and Buster's, but also escape room mixed all in one. And that was fun for us because it's the only one in the country. So it was something different, something that you never really get to see. And we were able to do that while we were up there. So I'm busy. She's busy. She's going through law school. She just started in the fall. So, like, we're both very busy people. And that brings a lot of stress and a lot of pressure onto us. But at the same time, when we get those opportunities to go out and just be ourselves, that's, you know, that's enjoyable just as much.
And you don't take them for granted, for sure, when they're far and few between. Exactly. I think that's something, like, with my husband and I before the pandemic, it was like we never saw each other. So, like, when we had a minute, it was like, oh my gosh, let's go do something. This is so fun. Now we both work from home and we never get away from each other. And it's like, I could go honestly the whole day without talking to him. And I live in the same house with him because we're just always together now. So it's like, you're not, you know, you're desensitized to their presence for sure. But I will say, my husband and I, we did an escape room, I think, like, a couple weeks ago. And they came in at the end and they were like, wow, that was, like, one of the fastest times we've ever seen anyone do it. And, you know, I'm assuming they tell everyone that finishes. But my husband was like, holy shit, we were the fastest ones to ever do this. Like, he literally, we go back to my in-laws who are watching our kids, and he's like, they said we were the fastest ones to go through this. Like, he would, I swear it might like have made an appearance on his resume now. Like, it might be at the top of his resume. Like, I'm really fast at escape room. So I love that you guys are into that. And it really is like one of my favorite activities as well, to just, it's like a good way to go have fun and yeah, not just have like a stiff dinner with your partner, which it's like you always have the opportunity to do that. So
Matt, can we pause so I can get the background noise out of the way? Yeah.
Meanwhile, my wind here is like got this going like this right now. So you're muted.
Oh. When you were talking earlier, when the wind was going, it was like, yeah, cutting you off. That's wild. Yeah, we may have to rethink this idea.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to put up some wood walls or something.
Yeah, build a sunroom. Get on that. Just expense it.
Yep.
All right. Well, Tyler, even though I didn't hear any of the background noise, but
they were testing the TVs and they were just, you know, yeah.
It'll give you a peace of mind to have it figured out either way. But so yeah, picking off of that, just so you know, if you're ever in Cleveland, we'll have to go to an escape room at the same time and we'll have to face off you and your girlfriend, me and my husband. We'll see who really is the fastest at them.
It's funny you say that because like they always do. They always come in and say, oh, you've done it in the fastest we've ever seen, right? Like, we're always like, we had like 2 minutes left. How is that the fastest time you've ever seen? And then there was one time though, we were in a mall, like they had an escape room in the mall. And so we go in and it was like a difficulty level 7 or something. And we go in and we're like, oh, this is going to be so hard, because like another one in that same group was a difficulty 7 and it was difficult. And okay. So we go in, we finished it in like 40 minutes. And they're like, that is definitely the fastest time we've ever seen somebody do it. And we're like, yeah, that makes more sense now.
Nice. Well, yeah, we did finish ours in like 40 minutes. But like halfway through, I was like trying to open something and I got like a metal splinter. And I was like, what the? And I was like freaking out about it because I could not get it out and it hurt so bad. And at the end, they came in, they're like, yeah, we didn't know if we should interject and like, you know, bring you some tweezers or something. I'm like, that would have been great. Like, it was like right on my nerve. It was terrible. But I digress. So we'll take it back to what matters here. Lay the groundwork for us. Yeah, you know, Weston touched on it a little bit. You've had a few different roles. You climbed the ranks at Vanderbilt. You're now over there in New York. But give us the groundwork on, you know, your turf origin story, the roles you've had, and then how you got to where you are today.
For sure. So, you know, back when I was growing up, my sister was big into sports. I was never really big into sports. So my dad would coach her teams, and, you know, it'd be one of those things where he would have to get the field ready for those games. So, like, I would always just tag along and help. So it'd be like the three of us going along and taking care of all these fields. And I told my dad one day, I said, you know, and we live about an hour south of DC. So like the closest professional team was the, you know, the Washington Commanders now and the Nationals. And then the Baltimore Orioles were a little bit further up the road. So I told him, I said, that's my aspiration. I want to be able to be a groundskeeper at one of those highest levels. He's like, well, his first question was, can you make money doing that? And of course, that's always a question everybody has in the turf industry. Can you make money? And it's like, you kind of go through it and you're like, okay, like you look up the basis, like what other people make. And I'm like, okay, dad, like I can do this. Like, it'll be possible. He's like, all right, well, if you're going to do it, you're going to do it right. And you're going to start off and you're going to do internships. So both my parents, mom and dad, they said, you're going to do an internship, find one, do something. So I started in golf. Technically, I was just a guy out there raking bunkers, mowing tees and filling up water coolers, you know, just one of those guys at the bottom. And slowly, as I was there for a year and a half, 2 years, I was able to move into a role where like they trusted me to do more of the fertilizer applications, more of that side of it, and push me into trying to learn more about just the industry as a whole. In high school, we had a field renovation that was done where we swapped from a native just push-up field into a more Bermuda grass-based field. And I got to meet the renovator that did that. And he said, hey, I have a role open at this professional park that we're going to take on. And he said, I want you to join us as game day staff. So I went and did that. And then that summer, I was part of their game day staff, move on that. That next year I was starting at Virginia Tech as a student. So that's when really that sports mind really kicked in. You know, I was doing baseball at an independent league level with the Southern Maryland Blue Crabs. And then I go on to be at Virginia Tech and start working as a student there. And then that next summer I went back to the Blue Crabs as their assistant groundskeeper to be able to help them take care of the surface that next summer. And that's when I was like, all right, sports is where I want to be. I want to be in the sports realm. So I kept moving towards that. Come back to Virginia Tech. They had a job open my sophomore year there. It was a full-time position to be in charge of their baseball facility. And I also had, I had responsibility being a part of the football field staff as well. So that's when I was able to say, all right, here's a real job. Here's something that'll get me started. So that's where I started. I was in that role for 2.5 years after that, while still taking full-time classes at Virginia Tech. We got to May of 2021 and we had another position open up, and I told my boss, I said, you know, based on how we're operating, you know, this would make more sense if we combine these two roles and then added another role and another part of our team. So we combined the two roles that were in charge of baseball and our softball fields, and we added a landscape assistant. So one, it gave me more experience in the role to be able to be in charge of baseball and softball, but it also gave us another person to help with our landscape. And that just created a more holistic team that we had at Virginia Tech to take care of all of our facilities. After that, I was able to jump, as you guys said, to Vanderbilt University as their assistant manager of grounds. I made that jump in November of 2021. And that role was fun for me, right? It was taking everything that I'd learned at Virginia Tech, the schooling that I'd had, all of that, because I wasn't set to graduate until May of 22. So I was able to, while still finishing school, jump to Vanderbilt and say, all right, let's take everything that I've learned as a groundskeeper at Virginia Tech and transition that into my role at Vanderbilt. So at Vanderbilt, I was in charge of 10 athletic fields, 5 synthetic, 5 turf fields, and all of the landscaping that was surrounding all of those spaces. I had 15 people I was overseeing, which was various roles from the landscaping to the fields to just the parking, the flat lots all around it. And that role was fun. It was fun to be able to, and that's a part of like our last groundskeeper chat, we talked about that coach to field manager relationship. And that was in full force there. I was able to, every week, week in and week out, I'm talking to all of our coaching staffs, lacrosse, soccer, football, everybody, to just understand what they need from us and how to be the best sports field manager I could for them. And I think that relationship that I had with those coaches and those staffs really pushed me into the next role that I have, which was the move that I made to be the head sports field manager at MetLife Stadium, which is home to 2 NFL teams. We had the New York Giants and the New York Jets. We host, this summer we had 20 other events other than football. So we hosted Monster Jam, Supercross, Manchester United versus Arsenal on a natural grass field overlaid of our synthetic, as well as just the other concerts that we had. So we hosted big names like Taylor Swift, Ed Sheeran, Beyonce. We had Metallica for a weekend. And then if anybody's into the international folks, you know, we had Carol G and some other K-pop bands as well. So like this, you come to a role like this and you're like, okay, I'm so used to sports, everything's football, lacrosse, soccer. And then I come here in my first 4 months, I don't even see the field. I don't even see the field that I'm taking care of. And I'm like, okay, what am I getting myself into? But as you learn the role, I was like, okay, my role is, it's safety at the end of the day, making sure that everybody that's on the floor is safe. But then also when we pull this flooring up in August, what's left underneath, you know, from all the compaction that we get from the events, all of that. That's really what my role started as. So like once we get to August and even July, when we hosted the Manchester United game, that's what my role was. My role is making sure that the field can be as safe as possible week in and week out. You know, you talk about what brought me here, what was my driving factor to get here? And there's opportunities that go beyond what my job is. Sure, the field's covered up 4 months of the year, but there's still opportunities in that 4 months to be able to travel, go meet other people, go see how other people are handling concerts and those special events. And then just meet anybody and everybody that I can. You know, I'm hopefully going to have an opportunity to go out to Cleveland to see how our paint gets made, go out to anywhere that I want to go. There's somebody that I can connect to. You know, I can go out to LA and meet those folks at SoFi. I can go wherever, internationally, even at this point too, just from hosting that Manchester United game. I got really close with the ground staff that takes care of that team. So the opportunities that go beyond the field and my role, that's what brought me here.
Yeah. Awesome, man. You talk about industry and peers, and it, you know, the first 10 minutes of talking with you, it's very easy to see why this next thing is, the next topic comes up. But, you know, you were named one of SFMA's Rising Stars. You know, what does that mean to you, getting recognition like that, being at the point you are in your career, and, you know, getting recognized by that group?
You know, when I found out that I was nominated to be one of SFMA's Rising Stars, one of their, in their inaugural class, it was an honor. And it was truly humbling to me to like realize that like the impact that I have on the industry is already being shown at such a young age and such a young part of, or a, you know, young part of the career that I'm in. You know, a lot of people, you know, they stay in the industry for years. They stay in 20, 30, 40, 50 years. And to say that, like, I've already made such a small impact at such a young age, only 6-7 years into the industry, that's humbling to me. And it goes to show too, that like these younger folks that are coming up through college, universities, high schools, even that are in these turf programs, you see that in Brentsville, you see that in, you know, even California and Georgia, all these different schools are starting to add these turf programs. It's an inspiration to them. And it's really cool to know that I can be an inspiration to those young people coming up, that they can say, hey, like, I'm a fan of the Giants, I'm a fan of the Jets, or I'm a big Vanderbilt fan, or I'm a big Virginia Tech fan. You know, if that guy can do it, I can do it too. And that's really cool to be able to be a small part of like what other people see, and to be one of those faces of stars that are rising in the industry. You know, that class that was put together was a very robust class. You know, you have people across the country spanning from coast to coast and anywhere in between, all parts of the industry. You saw it in Parks and Rec, you saw it in the professional realm, you saw it baseball, soccer, football, all of it. And that's so crazy to think that of that whole group, you know, we're all making an impact already.
So well said. And really, I think when I saw the class as well, it was like they couldn't have hit the nail on the head like better. It was just like everyone that I think of when I think about the up and coming, the next generation, was highlighted in that class. And it's a no-brainer for me that you were, you know, named one of them, because just listening to that, you know, I know a little bit about you. As I mentioned, I stalked you earlier. I'm kidding. but just, you know, anybody that just listened to the last 10 minutes, it's like a no-brainer. You're a go-getter, you are ambitious, and you set out to do something and you've accomplished it so early on in your career. But I need to know how your dad feels. Is he like, okay, this is paying off, you know, is he getting tickets to things that he wanted, or how does he feel now that you've, you know, made it in the industry in a sense? Does he support the decision?
You know, it's funny, like both of my parents, you know, they're both very proud of where I'm at. They're both very happy with where I am. Yes, this season is going to be difficult in the NFL, in any professional sport. It's very unforgiving when you're in the season. We have two games that are going to fall one day after Thanksgiving, or three games total. We have one the day after Thanksgiving. We have one the day before Christmas and the day before New Year's. Those are all the major holidays that you normally get to see your family and get to be around them. And this year I won't get that. I won't be able to be in Florida with them, wake up Christmas morning with them. You know, that's hard. That's very difficult. But at the same time, what's nice for my parents and what's nice for them is that they can sit back on a Sunday. And if they're, you know, just hanging out at the house, they can turn on the TV, they can turn on Fox, CBS, the NFL Network, whatever it is. And they can see the work that me, myself, and our team puts in week out. You know, and that's for them to be able to do that. My mom calls it Tyler sightings, and everybody on her Facebook, everybody, my girlfriend has even picked up on it. They're called Tyler sightings, you know, so they're always hunting for me on TV. If they can find me on TV, they're going to post it. They're going to be like, oh, look at who we found on TV. So like for them, that's really cool. When I was at Virginia Tech and even at Vanderbilt, I was able to have my dad be a part of, you know, some of the field setup as well. So it's really cool for both of them. And even my sister too, like they all, everybody gets to see the impact that they had on me growing up and where it's gotten me to this point.
That's cool. That's very cool. Yeah. It's awesome to hear you talk about being an inspiration to the next group of people. I have one question, you know, just as I hear you say that, who is your inspiration in the turf industry as you come up that you can look to and be like, that's the guy I want to be. Or the gal I want to be, I guess. So.
Right. And it's very interesting because I touched on this in that interview that I had for the Rising Star Award. It's hard to pinpoint one person, right? Like you sit and you go to SFMA conferences, you go and you meet other people through the job. I've met, you know, so many, just the different jobs I've had, I've met so many people that are an influence to me. And to pinpoint one would be a disservice to all the other people that have gotten me to the point, right? And I know I touched on a few names in that article, but I also missed a bunch. And I feel, you know, I feel bad for missing those people, but like, that's why I say, like, to pinpoint one, it's hard. You know, I talk to a lot of people. There's a lot of car ride home phone calls. You know, I live in New York City. There's traffic every day. I don't miss a day where there's not traffic. So I'm always sitting in the car. So that's my time I get to call other people, you know. So everybody that I met at Virginia Tech, all an influence to me. You know, the start for sure. You know, I had Kyle Ackerman, who was my start. He was the person that got me in the sports field industry and pushed me to always be better each and every day. So like influence, inspiration, everybody that I've ever met. But the person that really got me started was, you know, Kyle, who was our sports field renovator. He was the head groundskeeper for the Blue Crabs. He was the one that got me started. Everybody else along the way pushed me and said, you can do it. You need these things and you need to work on these things. And those were the people that, you know, got me to the point that I am. And I'm forever indebted to those people. You know, I can talk to them anytime. You know, I make phone calls to those folks at Virginia Tech, you know, Chad Price, who supplied a lot of our sod there. And even when I was at Vanderbilt and even some of our fertilizer reps, I still talk to them to this day, just because they had such an influence on me. They helped me get to the point where I was.
So cool. And I love that, you know, you say that like everyone along the way just pushed you up the ladder. And I really love when you're talking about your family saying that they could see that they've all played a role in this, because that is just like some Hallmark shit right there. It's so good. And you know, and that's like a part of the battle for a lot of people is having their significant other understand it, having their family understand it, because there's so much general misconception about this role, but the fact that you have their buy-in is really cool and that they get to, you know, be a part of it in some way. But, you know, going to the core of this chat, we really want to talk about high pressure gigs and what that means to a groundskeeper. How do we support groundskeepers in high pressure gigs? And you know, the misconceptions that you have to combat every single day from the general public, whether that general public means your user groups or the people on Twitter or, you know, some podcast that talks about, you know, NFL every week, or the people that are moving money around in your organization. We look at your title as people in this industry and we understand to an extent what you're up against. We know when we see a back-to-back game, we're like, he's pulling an all-nighter. Like we can conceptualize a lot of those things. But for the general public, when, you know, they look at the stadium or they might be even sitting in the stands there, they don't have all the ideas of what really went into making this happen. So in a high pressure situation like yours, how do you manage those misconceptions? How do you not let them get to you? Or, you know, what's your approach when you think of all the people that just may not understand what you do day in and day out?
Right. For me and the role that I have, you know, we're in one of the biggest markets in the world. We host, like I said earlier, we host big concerts, we host big shows. We're going to be one of the 16 FIFA sites. We're going to host Copa America games next year. All of those things combined, there's always people that are going to have an opinion. There's always going to be somebody, like you said, that maybe just don't understand what we're up against, what we're going through, right? So I'll briefly walk us through like a whole week for us and what all of the pieces, the moving pieces that we have, right? So a typical week for us in the NFL season, we have a game on a Sunday or a Monday. We come in the next day after that game and we erase all the paint. Any paint that goes down on the field, we erase. So our end zones, our midfield, and any of those like initiatives around the edges, those all get removed every week. We come in and then we start like Wednesday, Thursday, Friday of a typical week. That's when we're repainting everything. So we're taking what the teams are giving us or what a promoter is giving us, and we're saying, all right, we're going to take the time to paint all of this in those days. While in that process, you know, we have our paint staff that's doing all of that. We also have a labor pool that is working to make sure that everything's straight and even, and like all the lines come out perfect. They're doing all the setups around the building, you know, changing over the stadium as a whole. You know, a lot of people don't always know that. And if you just do a quick Google search, you can see MetLife Stadium NFL conversion. And you can see everything in the building gets changed, you know, every piece of signage, everything. And now the field paint also gets changed out as well. Before it used to be the end zone tray system, all of that. Now we just remove and repaint every week. But that all happens Tuesday to Friday during the week. And then Saturday is kind of a walkthrough equipment load in day. We host another game on Sunday and then we start back over on Monday or Tuesday, you know, so week in and week out. We're seeing that over and over and over again. Right now, where we sit, October, middle to end of October, we're 10 games in. We're set up for 10 games so far. We've hosted 10 games, 10 NFL games, 11 if you include our college game. And we have 10 more to go, not including any playoffs or, you know, whatever else is coming. So, you know, my boss jokes with me a lot. He said, you know, you're already through one NFL season. I'm like, what do you mean? We're only in week 7, week 8. He's like, you're through one NFL season already. And I'm like, when you look at it like that, it's kind of crazy. You know, we're 7 weeks in and we're already technically through one full season. So for that, you know, that's our typical week. When you sit back and look at it, you know, you have a lot of people that don't understand that. They don't understand that process. And not to mention, like you said, if we host a back-to-back game like we did in week 1 and then week 4, and then we'll do again twice the rest of the season after the week after Thanksgiving and then a weekend in December where we have those back-to-back changes. If I could be sponsored, it'd probably be by a bunch of caffeine connoisseurs. You know, I don't drink coffee, but I've come to find those other caffeine sources because trust me, when you go from, you know, we start week 4, we hosted Sunday night football. And then the next day we hosted Monday night football. No rain, no problems. You know, that just adds a whole nother beast when you start talking about weather, right? But we started scrubbing paint at 12:30 a.m. Monday morning after the Sunday night football game that we had started the day at 9 a.m. for. We started scrubbing paint at 12:30 a.m. Monday morning. We got done painting by about 10 a.m. Monday morning. So 10 hours right there just to paint. And then we sit around and you get set up for the game itself. And then you play the game and then you have to be in the next day to be ready to scrub it all off. You know, that back to back is tough. You know, there's a lot of no sleep, no time to really breathe. But at the same time, you still have to put the same product out there. It doesn't matter what happens the day before, the week leading up to the game. At the end of the day, the two teams that are playing on the field, they're the most important right then. And yeah, if we go to the next game and we have two different teams, that's fine. But it still has to be the same consistent surface week in and week out, game day to day, game to game. That's the hardest thing. You know, I've done, we've done plenty of overnights with some of these concerts that we bring in where we go concert, concert, back to back. Mm-hmm. You know, we're loading out Taylor Swift and we're bringing in the next show. And like, it's just got to be so fluid, right? So like, I've learned that like, once that sun comes up, it's a new day. Like, you're ready to go. Like, you hit a point at about 3-4 a.m. You're like, oh man, I don't know if I can make it through the night. And then you realize once the sun comes up, you're like, all right, it's fine, we're good. And that brings you a new life. That brings you a new day. But to that point, yes, it's very true that no matter what, week to week, game to game, we got to put the most consistent, the best, one of the best surfaces out there that we can, right? And it doesn't matter what event is on the field before. Like today, we're hosting a Halloween event for kids to be able to come trick or treat in the stadium. Can you imagine if they find a piece of candy stuck in the 10-yard line on the field? You know, like that's not allowed. Like that won't be okay. So like, no matter what the event is the day before, 2 days, 3 days before, at the end of the day at 1 o'clock, we still need to be ready for an NFL game on Sunday. So
you talk about a piece of candy in the field. I got a funny story from back in the day that I'm going to share real quick. When I was in high school, it was when those Snickers Hungry Why Wait commercials were out. And so my last game as a high school football player, I tucked away a Snickers like in the side of like my pants by like where the hip pads were. And in the middle of the huddle in the third quarter, I pulled it out and started eating it. And then just looked at the guys. I was like, why wait? Hungry. So, maybe piece of candy will be used. I don't know. So sorry to make light of that. Your work is obviously biggest stage in sports week after week. You know, we just talked about what that looks like, all the different events backed up one right after another. Personally, how do you handle all of that pressure that comes with making those overnight conversions or dealing with weather in those situations? Or all the extra events and making sure day after day after day you're good, you know, how do you maintain that, you know, balance in your life to be able to handle that pressure?
I think every sports field manager, if I were to say I didn't have pressure, would be like, you're lying to me, right? And I think everybody would say that in this role or in any role, any stadium, there's always a little bit of pressure, right? You know, we're sitting halfway through the season. And like I said before, we still have to put the best version of ourselves out there week in and week out. And that means as soon as we walk through the gates in the morning, like we're ready to go. We're professionals. We're no matter what's going on in the world around us, we have to, you know, put it all aside and know that at the end of the day, we're putting multi-million dollar athletes on the field. And they're just as important as anything in our profession. Their safety is number one. So dealing with that pressure is hard, you know, dealing with knowing that you have some people's lives in your hands is hard, you know, but at the end of the day, it's the people that you put around you that are important. You know, our team here, our facility operations team is great. They're always there to help. They're always there. If you need anything, you know, everybody on our staff has a job that could probably take 60 hours, 60, 70 hours in a week. Right. And we try and push it into 40 to 50 hours. A lot of the time, so that we still have time for the people outside of work. So for us, it's about our support system that we have here, but it's also about that support system outside of here. And that's important. And if you don't have that, I suggest anybody to find that. I suggest somebody, you know, that hobby outside of work, that TV show that you can get hooked on. You know, a lot of people here watch Suits, and that's one thing that everybody gets into, or whether it's just going outside and walking around somewhere, you know, like I recognize that a lot where I get stressed or a lot of pressure just from looking at the same seats during the day, the same inside of the stadium. And a lot of stadiums that are, you know, up and coming, you know, I've visited Austin FC or I visited other places. They're straight up now. There's no sight lines out. And so making sure you get outside of your job, making sure you get outside of the workplace when you can, is important to, you know, relax that pressure, relax that stress. Because if you got caught up in what's going on inside of the stadium or the place that you work every day, everybody would go crazy and everybody would succumb to that pressure. And so for me, like when I do get that day off, when I do get that random week or that random weekend, it's important to take that time to reset, be ready to go, because at the end of the day, we still have a job to do when we come back the next.
Great advice. And definitely what we're trying to convey with this series is just getting that advice out there to others who may be in similar positions or who may aspire to have this position in the future. But how can we take it further? You know, we're doing this series in our on our podcast, but we're just in a small corner of the industry. How can the industry as a whole support sports field managers in positions like you, in yours, or even in any position? Like you said, you feel the pressure no matter if you're working for, you know, the young kids or if you're working for NFL athletes. How can our industry help support these high pressure gigs, whether that be resources, conference material, any way that you could think of? How, I'm going to say it one more time, it's going to sound ridiculous. How can we support you and others in your position?
And I think it's deeper. It's deep, right? How do you help people that are constantly working, constantly moving, constantly doing stuff? How do you go and you sit down? You know, I had a phone call with a colleague in the NFL yesterday, and it was 5 o'clock local time. And he called me, and it was funny. He called and he said, "Hey, like, I know it's late, but if you're still up to talk, like, you know, let's chit chat about what we need to." And it's funny because, like, I think about it and I'm like, yeah, it's 5 o'clock, but also, like, this will be fun. This will be enjoyable. It'll be nice to just talk to other people. So I think that's something that, like, some people may take for granted, right? Like, if you have somebody that's looking up to you or looking to just seek information, always answer that phone call, because you never know what that other person's going through, right? If somebody were to call me right now, in a meeting, so it'd be kind of different. But like, if somebody were to call me, I'm in the middle of a field painting, and they, you know, it's somebody I hadn't talked to in a while, or it's somebody that I know is probably going through something hard that week with an event or whatever. Like, I always suggest answering that phone call, because that little bit, it may be 5 minutes, it may be an hour, it may be 2 hours. Taking that phone call will only help them be able to help themselves, but it also may help you too. You may find information in that conversation that you may not have had before. And it may just give you a break. You know, we talked about the pressure and the stress. It may just give you that relief for a little bit too. You know, I talked about that. You know, I still talk to some of the fertilizer salesmen that I have, and it's funny. I'm playing phone tag with one right now. We've been playing phone tag all week. I haven't been able to get a hold of him, but even just the voicemail that he leaves me, it just leaves me chuckling. Like, you know, like, it just gives me that reminder of, like, a familiar voice or something that just, like, hey, like, it's okay. You can get through the week. You can have that support. So that's, you know, from peers in the industry, I feel like it's important to always, you know, listen and always be there for other people. You talk about education. You know, when I was preparing for this, I brought up the mission statement for SFMA, the Sports Field Managers Association, and it reads, "SFMA advances professionalism in sports field management and safety through education, awareness programs, and industry development." So those three things, I feel like, are what you're touching on, right? We need to make sure that people are educated and giving them the tools to, like, one, how do you communicate with other people? If you say, hey, I want you to answer the phone, how do you communicate effectively to make sure that that phone call is worthwhile? Awareness programs, I think, is important, because giving people the tools to know what other people are going through, right? And know what is going on in other facets of the industry. I feel like, for me, like, I've been through different sections of it, right? And I've learned what a sod farm is going through. I've learned what a golf course person's going through. Whether it's natural, whether it's synthetic, whether it's the highest level, whether it's all the way at the bottom and the lowest level, we're all going through the same thing. So if people are more aware of that, you know, and they just know, at the end of the day, we're all sports field managers. We're all people. We're all people that are going through the same things, the same problems. So, like, being aware of what's going on around you is just as important. And then the last thing that was in that mission statement is industry development. And I feel like that kind of goes hand in hand with education, in that while our role is also to educate others, I feel like we also need to, like, get that within ourselves and within the industry as well. You know, so conferences are important, field days are important, being an active member in your local chapters as well is just as equally important too, because that gives you another base. It gives you another group of people to learn from. And I think that goes a long way.
Well, yeah, I think you just earned yourself a side gig as the spokesperson for SFMA. That was so eloquently said. And Weston, I saw you looking off to the side. Did your plumber show up?
Nope. We're good. We're still good.
Perfect. Weston, did you want to ask about the pressure from working at Vanderbilt and how it differs from NFL? I know that was one of your questions that you came up with, so I wanted to give you the opportunity to elaborate.
I think we're good. I think we touched on enough there that I think it's, I think what we talked about is really important. And discussing and being not afraid to discuss it, I think is there. So I think we could probably skip that one and go straight into the weather report if you want to.
The weather report, Weston's favorite part of the show. I'm sure he has something prepared
for this one.
Gonna knock our socks off. Well, Tyler, the weather report is just our little Oh, you go, please. So excited.
Tell us about it. What do we got?
The weather report obviously is you know our gauge on what's happening in the industry right now and what has us excited. Typically when we get to this portion, Meg is ready to go and I forget that it's happening and stumble, but I actually prepared for this one. So I think the thing I'm excited for as we head now into late fall, early winter, is to see the battle that the groundskeepers have to face here coming up. And I know it's difficult and hard, but I also think it's probably one of the most rewarding times to go through something at work, right? Like if you're facing bad weather situation and once you get to the other side of it, it is such a good feeling to know that you can handle that. And this, to know that we're going into, you know, November, December, January football games where things get rough and ugly, to see the work that the guys put into it, and what that'll look like, on the other side. I'm really excited to see, you know, what this winter brings, more from the work side, and results that are, you know, undoubtedly going to happen. With the guys and gals making things happen. So that's what I'm looking forward to.
Love it. Perfection. I'm a proud co-host of that one. That was awesome. Mine is more on a personal level for us here at Pioneer. Next week marks our fall sales meeting, and it's a time when we all get together, regroup, refocus on this time of year being an exciting time of year. Weston and I will be under the same roof, so we're definitely going to talk music, but we're also going to have to talk some work as well. So I'm excited for that. But it's also just a time where we refocus on our customers and really helping them, you know, star in their role. So I'm excited for all the great minds of Pioneer to be under
one. You said music, right? You said you guys talk music. All right. So I'm going to turn it around and I'm going to say, you know what? Give me the co-host responsibilities, right? I'll ask a question to y'all. What are we listening to? You know, Weston, when you were in, you know, in your other role, like what's in the headphones? You know, I think that should be a podcast in itself. What's behind the headphones?
Million dollar idea right there.
Yeah. Meg and I bonded over music. And one of my first weeks in the office, I was doing orientation and just sitting there. And all of a sudden, a person come on and I thought I was getting played somehow, because of the person that I played a lot. Guy's name's Noah Kahn. He's actually from up the road here in Vermont. And I thought somebody from Austin had called up and talked crap about me and how much I listened to this one person. And really what it was Meg was a huge fan of him as well. So I'm kind of in that, I don't even know, it's kind of folk alternative music. And we joke it's the more depressing a song could be is kind of where I'm at. So something soft, quiet.
What's your favorite Noah Kahn song, Weston? Like,
There's a song called The View Between the Villages that I like the most, but we are, as you can see behind me, we're getting close to stick season here, so it is right there. So he's from about 20 minutes up the road here. He's pretty big thing here, so
it seems like you might be aware of Noah
Kahn. He may have the stalker level, you know. He may have the Noah Kahn stalker level maybe coming. I don't know.
Well, I can one up him in a sense because I named my second son after Noah Kahn. So we're both super fans. And it's funny that you asked Weston what his current favorite song was, because on Monday morning I texted him. I had to go back to my text to see. I was like, I just out of nowhere, I was like, current favorite Noah song. And he said, well, it's still The View Between Villages. Mine is still Your Needs, My Needs. Yeah. And then we both were saying, like, yeah, there's something about someone else's depression in a song that just really pumps me up. but it sounds like, Tyler, you might be a semi-fan. You didn't go blank when we said the name, which usually happens. People are like, no idea.
I've actually seen him in concert. So my girlfriend got me tickets as a surprise for my birthday. She said, hey, we're going to Chattanooga, Tennessee for your birthday, which was in February. So we were still living in Tennessee. I said, who are we going to go see? She said, I don't know, just some small name guy. She's a big fan of him, big fan. So like when we started dating, like she brought me on to Noah Kahn, and like I've gotten to a point where I'm like, yeah, this is somebody I want to listen to. Like you said, it's definitely true to a point. Like that depression that somebody else is going through, those feelings that somebody else is going through, everybody can relate to it in a way. And like, I'm sitting here trying to think, there's somebody else in my mind that I like would listen to with that. But it's very true. You know, Noah Kahn is actually playing in New York. He's playing Madison Square Garden in July next year. So we're hoping to be able to go to that. I really, really, really was hoping that we were going to get to go to Boston to see him. Fenway Park, his biggest show I'll ever have. Probably two sold out nights, no problem. But instead, we're going to host Luke Combs at MetLife Stadium. So I think that'll be just a little bit better.
That's like right this year. I think my top artist will be Noah Kahn, and then Luke Combs will probably be my second on my Spotify year in review. So you're not in bad company with that.
We were able to see Cody Johnson and Chris Jansen a couple weeks ago in Long Island, and that was a good time. That was a really good show. And then when we were in Boston a couple weeks ago, we saw Jordan Davis and Cameron Marlowe. And we both agreed that was probably a top five concert that her and I had been to, you know. And we've seen some big ones here this year, right? Ed Sheeran was one of my favorites that we had this season. But definitely one of the ones that I've been to would be that Jordan Davis one. So like you said, that other people's emotion, there are other people's feelings that they're singing about, you can relate to it, and it makes it for a fun, enjoyable time.
Is Jordan Davis the one who sings Next Thing You Know?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. I literally cry every time I hear that song. Weston, we just hit the jackpot. I think we found our third musketeer, because we've been on an island on our own, but we just hit the jackpot. We found someone who has the same taste in music as us.
The other one, we interviewed Ryan Bjorn a few weeks ago, and we mentioned Noah then, because I think that was when the tickets for Boston went on sale. And within like 5 minutes after it hung up, Ryan was calling, and he's like, yeah, I'm trying to get tickets to that too. So there's some pocket people out there. So.
It's funny. I saw Ryan when we were in Boston, and it was the first time I met him in person. And it's funny. Now I'll probably text him now and be like, did you get those tickets to Noah Kahn yet or what?
He didn't. We were trying together. So
I got six tickets here in Cleveland. I will demote my three sister-in-laws for you guys. That's what I'm willing to do for this friendship.
Weston, I think it's a reunion in the books. I think that the six of us can all come together in Cleveland and make it happen.
I don't know. Weston and I went and saw Noah Kahn when he was in Cleveland here the last time. We went and sat outside the venue because we had a work engagement that evening, so we couldn't actually go to the show. But then we ditched the work engagement. We like ran over. His wife Steph was there too, who, if I've made it clear at all how big of a fan I am of Noah Kahn, she is even surpasses Noah. Your wife is the best, Weston. But the three of us went to the show and I really had to keep my cool. Like, because the way I like react to music is not something I'm going to expose to my coworker the second time I'm meeting him. So, but this time around, if we go to the concert together, I'll fully unleash the craziness. I get total fangirl.
When is he in Cleveland?
My birthday, May 28th, 2024. I've now seen Mumford and Sons on my birthday, the Lumineers on my birthday, and now I'll see Noah Kahan. It's like a trifecta.
I was going to say, it's a trifecta.
Nice. So we talk escape rooms and music, and then there's like 20 minutes of like Terp in there somewhere.
The recipe for a perfect podcast, honestly.
It's good listening.
But Tyler, seriously, if I wasn't a fan before, I'm even a bigger fan now. What you were able to share with us today, I think not only does it solidify your placement in this industry as being totally earned and well-deserved, but also just a thought leader, really, because you have some great advice to give to others, and also just great perspective. You know, when we ask these type of questions, I think Weston touched on it a bit. It's like we stray away from talking about it because you never know what the other person's going to say. You know, a few times we've asked people, like, what do you do to get away? And they're like, I don't. Like, I'm not mentally well. Like, and it's like, oh, okay. We stray away from asking these questions in the industry. But everything that you said was like, put it in a textbook and give it to a first-year TERF student.
And I think those, all of those things are important. I think it is important to ask those questions because for those people that are struggling, and I'd be amiss to say that, like, there probably isn't a bit more of a stress level or anxious level since I've come here, right? I'd be amiss to not admit that myself. I think it's very important to always ask those questions in yourself and make sure that you do sit back and you do take that time. And that's something that in the 6 months that I've been here, I'm coming up on my 6 month anniversary of work here in a couple of days. I think it's important for everybody to sit back and look at it and make sure that they do take time for themselves outside of work, because at the end of the day, the job will always be there the next day. Your inbox full of 100,000 emails will always be there the next day. It may have a few extra, but that it's true. You know, we did sandwich a lot of other things in there with music and whatever it is, Weston's plumber appointment that he's got coming, you know, whatever it is, right? Like, we fit all this in here, but like, I do think it's important to make sure that, like, and it's something that, you know, me personally battling it myself, and I know a lot of other people are too. Take that time for yourself and make sure that you're happy within what you're doing, not only out on the field or in your personal life, but for you. That personal well-being is the most important, you know. And listen to Noah Kahan every once in a while. Noah, if you're listening, you know, biggest fans, three biggest fans right here, you know, make it happen.
That would be hilarious. I'm guessing he's listening to something outside of this.
Probably, but hey, you never know, right?
We've mentioned him enough times. We might be like popping up. He has an assistant that gets Google alerts to see where he's been talked about. We've talked about him enough at this point where we might be showing up on his radar.
Maybe slip it into the post. Like when we say, oh, here's, you know, this podcast where we talk about all things music, you know, including Noah Kahan. You know, you never know.
Kids. Oh, geez.
Jonathan from our end is going to have so much fun trying to edit this damn thing.
Oh, honestly, I would say this was the perfect podcast. We are not editing a single second out.
I was going to say, cut out the little bit, cut out the meeting transition. That's it. You know, other than that, just let her rip.
Well, when we talk about mental health, this last hour was that perfect dose that I, you know, I'm working, but like, this is exactly why I love my job. Because these are the type of connections you get to make in this industry that are really, I think, unique to this industry. You don't find this everywhere. So it was good if at the end of the day, the only thing that happens is I got, you know, a good tick of mental health for myself. Great. But I do think if others listen to it, they'll have an entertainment value of 100 for sure.
Sure.
Any lasting thoughts, Weston, before Thanks. We send him on his way?
Nope. Good. Thank you. Appreciate it, man. Very, very informative. Awesome.
Yes. Thank you, Tyler. And we appreciate your time today. As stated, that you're a busy guy.
Yeah. Thank you guys for having me. And hey, if we ever need to have this check in, we can just bring it back. Maybe do like a mini groundskeeper chat and, you know, just talk all things music.
Your third side gig being our third co-host for the groundskeeper chat, a standing appointment.
I appreciate y'all's time and I hope you have a good weekend.
You too. Thank you guys.
Take care, man. We'll see you.